Well, those words, do not worry, easy to say, difficult to do, aren't they? If we find we're living any of life. And this week, it's made me laugh a little bit as I reflect on the passage, because moving house does weird things to you, doesn't it? Moving from one place to another generates a kind of stress that is unique, I think, to moving house, because you're also moving in other ways as well. And here we are focusing on that. I want to say that for a lot of people in this country and around the world, actually, worrying about what's going to be on the table today is a really big issue. And actually, Jesus was addressing people, many of whom worked each day for enough money to feed their children on a day-by-day basis. I don't want to minimize that when Jesus says, do not worry. He's not being glib there. He's addressing people who were in the same situation. A lot of poor and vulnerable people are today. They live day to day, and that's very real. But it seems to me that Jesus here is making a particular reference to how we understand our life in terms of material wealth. In this passage before, it says something very bold. You cannot serve both God and money. Very simple statement. You cannot serve both God and money. It's strong stuff. It's really strong stuff. And so Jesus is saying something really profound about what it is to be human and what that looks like for us. And I want to think about that today, because he's really saying we are more than we consume and we are more than we own. I've had two really significant events that have happened this week or over the last few weeks. The first is going to the tip. So the process has been, you know, what can go to the charity shop? We get it all together, we go to charity shops, and we've taken a lot of stuff to charity shops, and we've done that. But then you get to a point, particularly in our situation, I don't know how many people have been in that vicarage. It is a big vicarage, and there's places to store things all over the place that you wouldn't even know about. Secret back rooms where people like me can just dump things until they have to move. And then it has to be cleared out. And also, of course, we're combining two households, Rachel, and we're going, so from a large vicarage to a small vicarage, you can imagine a lot of stuff has gone to the tip. And what it's meant is that it's made me really focus on that. When you go to the tip, there's a whole container in Pudsey Tip, that is now stuff that can be reused, so you can put it in there. But there's other places, like the electronics sort of, I'd rather be able to see you clearly than... the electric section. I'm pretty sure a lot of the time it's not about the fact that it doesn't work. It's just that people want a new one. And it's too much hassle doing something with it, so they just throw it away. And when you go to the tip, it's a real visual reminder of just the amount of stuff that we have in the world. And, you know, it's quite striking. The second life-changing experience or insightful experience I have had is after 10 years, this week, a trip to IKEA. Now, I want to suggest to you that they're like bookends, those two things, IKEA and the tip. You go to IKEA, it's an extraordinary experience. You turn up and you queue for like half an hour to get in, first of all. People are desperate to get in there. You get in and then you walk. I'm sure I walk for at least a kilometer inside the shop. Because you don't just go in a straight line, you zip around and you go through every single section. And eventually you get to the end for the hot dog, the 45p hot dog. But as you move around, I did feel a bit like the Perseverance, the main character in Pilgrim's Progress. And you know, there's the kitchen section and there's the bathroom. And then you get the light bulbs and this, you know what I mean? It's overwhelming. There's all this stuff there. Here's the really challenging thing. The difference between IKEA and the tip is about 5 years. Because in five years, maybe a bit more for some, a lot of that stuff that people have purchased in IKEA is going to be at the tip. And that whole world of experiencing those things close together, has really challenged me. Now, of course, there's great advantages. We have a lovely cupboard as a result of IKEA that, interestingly, I didn't build. Ben and Rachel built. So there's, you know, obviously, and IKEA, isn't it, you know, employs lots of people. Look, there's some real positives there. But I just think that, you know, Jesus is sort of, is speaking into this whole question of how we define ourselves. And I think has something very profound to say here. And it's really very simple that your life is more significant than IKEA and the tip and what happens in between. Your life is more significant than that. And he says, you know, the birds of the air don't have storehouses for themselves, but God provides for them. And the lilies of the field don't have money to dress themselves, but they have this great beauty. And of course, what he's saying there is that you have great beauty and value as a human being, just as you are. And so Jesus comes to the conclusion of this section, and he comes to this verse and he says, but seek his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. What does that mean for us? Well, going back to the verse there that we had, the verses that we had from Proverbs, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will make straight your paths. Those two verse passages go together, don't they? Seek first his kingdom, in all your ways acknowledge him. All these things will be given, he will make straight your paths. You see the link there between the two. I wonder how trusting you feel at the moment in God. It's been a pretty crazy 6 months, hasn't it? I mean, if you had told me 6 months ago that I'd be looking out at a congregation of masked people, you know, I wouldn't have believed you. It's been a crazy 6 months. And I wonder how you feel about that. I wonder if you've been able to see God at work in that. Or maybe you feel a bit abandoned by God, perhaps even abandoned by the church. The good news is God can deal with those sorts of emotions. But God has been there through all of this. And I think that that bigger picture, that bigger story is something about what it means to be human. Because our very humanity has something about being fragile. 6 months ago, 9 months ago perhaps, I bet you thought, I'm relatively in control of my life. But I think if there's one thing the last 6 months has taught us is that actually we're not really in as much control as we thought we are. Because suddenly this thing comes from out of the blue and everyone's lives are turned upside down. Working lives, school lives, family lives, everything's just inverted and turned upside down. And there is a kind of vulnerability in that. And I suppose the passage here is suggesting that that there's something about relying on God in that situation. Sorry, folks, I am going to have to put my glasses back on. There's something about relying on God in that situation that is really powerful and significant, because the Christian life is not about being stronger and more able. It's about being more available to God and more discerning of God's Spirit. So it's different from the way of the world. It's radical. It's calling us to a servant lifestyle of handing over our lives to God. And it's radical. Amidst all the chaos of moving, I've had a chance to reflect on the last 7 years. I suppose I'm amidst it all in a bit of a reflective place at the moment, for obvious reasons. And I've just been reflecting on some of the ways that I've seen God at work in my own life and in the life of the church. There was a couple of really big challenges that I personally felt when I arrived. And the first, of course, was as a family we came in a very vulnerable place because Sally was very poorly. And May we arrived, and by about July we knew that she was really not going to, you know, she was going to die. And so we came, and I've never been a vicar before, you know, I've been a curate, but I turn up to a new church, and, you know, wow, that's a challenging personal situation to be in, to manage that transition. I think John had a word about sort of being stripped down, and then the church would sort of build us up at that time. And what was really fascinating and wonderful is that in that very situation, of course, Alan and Eunice are here today and others who are also very much at the heart of dealing with this. Amidst that very situation, the church was able to minister to us, and something kingdom-building sort of happened amidst the lasagnas and the shepherd's pies and the chicken pies. Thank you all for all of those. We went through phases, literally. We would have lots of chicken pie, which was amazing. But all the different things that people did for us. Amidst all of that, we saw God at work. And really, without deliberately doing it, the church started to grow. I don't know if you can remember those first 12 months, but we just sort of just happened, didn't it? We weren't really in control, to be honest, but it just kind of happened. And so I saw God at work in that. And then there was a sort of the challenges. When you come to a church and the PCC are going to be doing it in the next few months, what happens is they define a couple of priorities. They say, we want the new person to be able to focus on these things. And there was a couple of big ones that looked at you immediately. The first was to reorder the church. Because obviously, as some of you will remember, there were pews. And I think Brenda stood up. It was very soon. I think I was filling in, and it was really just before I applied for the job. And she said, we've just got the faculty through, which meant we've got permission to do it. So I knew that was on the cards. Now, looking back now, you think, it's fantastic, isn't it? And it's so easy to look back and to think, oh yeah, it's just God just worked. But looking out from before you've got the several hundred thousand pounds, it doesn't feel that way, does it? And it's no credit to me. It's Brenda and the team who worked so hard on it and just watched God provide finance for it and then the right people to actually do the work. But in 4 years, because I think Bishop Nick came 4 years after that my first service back to do a Thanksgiving. It was 4 years. The church was reordered and we were giving thanks for it. Now, just seeing God at work in that, you go, wow, well, how are we going to do this? And yet, you know, if God is in it, the promise that we had was that if God is in it, he'll take us down to the foundation, and if God's in it, it'll happen. And I think that's right. I think that's what happened, and that's really exciting. It was challenging at different times, but for all of you, many of you were engaged in that. Some of you have pews in your house to reflect what has been in the past. And I suppose the other priority was about sort of, you know, having lots of families and young people in church. That was the other thing that I remember really struck me. And again, the church here was just set up for that because there was so much great stuff going on. And there was a fantastic, messy church and really committed people involved in children's work. And of course, we've got links with the school. It was just in that place. And again, gradually that just grew, 30, 40, 50, 60 kids and so on. And sometimes, in spite of me, it all happened. We might laugh, but some of you will know. There's some truth in that. But actually, God just worked in a way that, you know, somehow God was faithful in that. In all your ways, acknowledge him, and he will make straight your paths. And I suppose as you look to the future, thinking about the challenges ahead, not just the challenges of change, but just the challenges of COVID-19 and whatever else is going on. The promise that we have is that God works. That as we seek his kingdom, he opens doors. That we may think, oh, I can't do this. But if we're available and we say, you know, God can actually work and God can move things on in exciting ways. I want to finish with three thoughts for you. And they all start with P, which if my parents are listening in Oz, which often they do, this is for you, Dad. He's always using three letters, so here we go. So the first is prayer. Prayer is really important, isn't it? To pray each day. It's been so good seeing more and more people joining the prayer in morning prayers. And this week, I don't know how many views I've been offline, but there's been quite a lot of people, 50, 60, each morning praying. Prayer is important. We've got Carol here this morning. We've got people who are real intercessors, and sometimes I go and I sit with Carol and I just ask her to pray for a couple of different issues, and she prays and God works. Because the thing is, we're very ordinary. Both leaders and all of us are very ordinary people, but we have an extraordinary God. And the link between those two things is prayer. And so we set time aside to pray, and we as a church need to take prayer really seriously and have that as central. Secondly, perseverance is important because at times the journey is difficult. Right now, in any one church, there's always a group of people who are feeling either depressed or anxious or both. That's just reality. So some of you will be in that place. And in those times, it's not easy, and I don't want to be glib. It's just that sometimes we just persevere in those situations. That as a church, looking forward, there will be challenges ahead, but we are called to persevere. That in your personal life, you might be having conflict with someone who is a family member or maybe a work colleague, or maybe the whole COVID thing has just turned your life upside down, And there's a call to persevere in faith. And as a church, that's really important. That perseverance is, I think, a bit underrated sometimes. That we keep going. And I'm so grateful for all of you who have persevered with me. But also who have persevered with ministries that at times have been quite costly. And yet you've persevered. Well done. And finally, I think it's about priorities. Seek first his kingdom. And all these things will be revealed to you. Priorities are so important. Because let's face it, there's a bunch of things we can focus on. And I've been amazed sometimes how I get so massively knocked off course, and it can take me a good month to sort of reorientate myself, and I'm the vicar. It's really important, isn't it, to keep our focus on Jesus and on following and on allowing the Holy Spirit to guide us. It's a pretty awesome message, isn't it? Do not worry. But, you know, God has ways to enable us as a church community to move forward together. And I'm so grateful for all that you've all done in so many different ways to bless this church, this community, and also actually to bless me and my family. So as we move forward, certainly next week, we'll be praying for you, Rachel and Ben and I. We value your prayers for us as well. But I just want to leave you with that. Amen.